Kamala Harris's seat to appoint an African-American woman. He said he would take that into consideration. But he has made a hard commitment on this seat to appoint an African-American woman. I said he could appoint a caretaker. But if he does choose to appoint Barbara Lee, like I said, I don't think that's the end of the world, given how much the country has been tilted against African-American women for 250 years, given that we don't have a single African-American woman in the Senate. And I think that that broader dynamic of the Senate race is what is coloring people wanting Dianne Feinstein to stay there. And that's a sad situation.
And finally, Congressmember Khanna, are you concerned that just as Republicans said no to Dianne Feinstein being temporarily replaced on the Judiciary Committee when she was away, are you concerned that if she resigned and someone else stepped in, that somehow they would control whether or not there would be another Democrat allowed to be on the in the Judiciary Committee where the judicial appointments are made?
That's a fair question. I'm not, because the Republican leadership has said that if that situation happened, they would honor the process of allowing the replacement to be on the Judiciary Committee and make up the numbers, because that is the precedent that they have, and that affects the Republicans' own seat assignments. And everyone that I have talked to on the Senate side believes that they would honor that, because it affects their own Senate seat assignments.
Congressmember O'Connor, we want to thank you for being with us, Democratic Congressmember from California, Deputy Whip of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, speaking to us from Fremont, California. Next up, we go to Atlanta, where police SWAT team, guns drawn, raided the Atlanta Solidarity Fund, arresting three people who'd been raising money to bail out protesters opposed to a massive police training facility known as Cop City, opposed to it being built. Stay with us. Viceroys, this is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman, as we go to Atlanta, Georgia, where a police SWAT team, guns drawn, raided the Atlanta Solidarity Fund on Wednesday and arrested three people who'd been raising money to bail out protesters opposed to the construction of a massive police training facility known as Cop City. Marlon Coutts, Adele McLean, and Savannah Patterson were charged with one count each of money laundering and charity fraud. Warrants allege the three were, quote, misleading contributors to fund the actions in part of Defend the Atlanta Forest, a group classified by the United States Department of Homeland Security as domestic violent extremists. As proof of money laundering, the warrants cite reimbursements from April 2021 to March of this year that total less than $7,000 and were for forest cleanup, totes, COVID rapid tests, media, and yard signs. The Atlanta Solidarity Fund issued a statement that it's existed for 7 years, quote, with the sole purpose of providing resources to protesters experiencing repression. To be clear, none of the arrested Cop City activists have been designated as domestic violent extremists, nor have they been convicted, just charged. In March, prosecutors charged 23 forest defenders with domestic terrorism after clashes between police and protesters, less than 2 months after Atlanta police shot dead Manuel Tortuguita Terán, a 26-year-old environmental activist. An autopsy concluded they were sitting with their hands raised up in front of their body when police shot them 57 times. In response to the arrests Wednesday, the National Lawyers Guild issued a statement, quote, in firm solidarity with the Atlanta Solidarity Fund and all of the Stop Cop City activists unjustly targeted by law enforcement, unquote. They noted, quote, bail funds exist to protect people's right to dissent. They're necessary, legally sound resources that help people more safely access their constitutionally protected rights to speech and assembly by lowering the risks of financial ruin or indefinite jail time, unquote. The arrests come just days before the Atlanta City Council is set to vote on the fate of Cop City. Officials recently admitted the public cost of the project will top $67 million, twice as high as originally stated. For an update, we go to Atlanta to speak with Kamau Franklin, founder of the organization Community Movement Builders. Kamau, welcome back to Democracy Now! I mean, can you lay out what happened? As we look at this image of a SWAT team moving in, guns drawn, charging this group, ultimately, the authorities, with charity fraud, certainly someone like George Santos, who was just recently arrested, there wasn't a SWAT team that moved in on him. Can you talk about what took place?
Sure. Thanks for having me. So what took place was an escalation by the authorities, the state of Georgia, the city of Atlanta, on the infrastructure of the movement. So approximately at 9 a.m. on Wednesday, the Georgia Bureau of Investigation, along with SWAT teams, there's reports that there were personnel from Homeland Security there, decided to back a truck up in a residential neighborhood, an armored vehicle with armored police personnel, SWAT teams, to basically go in, guns drawn, as you stated, to arrest people on what essentially is would be considered a white-collar crime and or a financial crime in terms of what the charges would be. But this use of a violent force against the Atlanta Solidarity Fund really shows that the real intent has nothing to do with any criminality, which has never taken place with the Atlanta Solidarity Fund. But this is really another way of destroying and attacking the infrastructure of organizing and movement, particularly against those who have been organizing against Cop City.
Wouldn't this, to say the least, be a deterrent to people who might want to donate to the fund?
Well, apparently this is with the hope of the Atlanta Police and the Georgia Bureau of Investigation and, again, the Governor Kemp. But already the movement has stood strong. We found an alternative bail fund, a national bail fund, which is stepping in to support movement organizers and the folks who were arrested who are part of the Atlanta Solidarity Fund. But yes, the very attempt is to ruin the Atlanta Solidarity Fund, an organization, as stated, has been around for over 7 years, way before the Stop Cop City organizing and activism, way before even the Black Lives Matter protests in 2020. These folks have been around organizing and supporting movement activists and organizers, making sure that anyone who was arrested in Atlanta had an opportunity to receive bail, and instead of being locked up and waiting trial, that those folks could defend themselves on any specious charges. Once they were out, they could resume their lives, they could resume being active and organizing. They are basically a needed infrastructure for organizing a movement, which the state and the city has gone after and attacked.
I want to go to Marlon Coutts, one of the three Atlanta Solidarity Fund organizers who were arrested on Wednesday. But they were speaking in February after information surfaced that Georgia prosecutors were preparing RICO charges against activists who opposed the construction of Cop City in Atlanta. He's currently in jail.
We understand that this movement is as broad as society itself. It includes environmental activists, community groups, faith leaders, abolitionists, students, artists, and people from all over. But police, prosecutors, and even Governor Kemp have been trying to suggest in the media and in court that the opposition to Cop City is actually the work of a criminal organization whose members conspire to commit acts of terrorism. In essence, they're trying to concoct a RICO-like story about the movement.
So, Kamau Franklin, Marlon Coutts and the two others arrested remain in jail from Wednesday?
Yes, they still are in jail. They have a bail hearing coming up today at 1 o'clock. And I should say, based on, you know, what Marlon was talking about, we've heard rumors for months that the other parts of the infrastructure of the movement would be attacked. We've come out with different videos showing support and acknowledging that this information, although could not be verified at the time, was something that was sort of laid at our doorstep, that other parts of the movement to stop Cop City would be attacked because the city and the state were scared that through all of their tactics, the movement has not gone away. In fact, it has grown. And so we think that the attack, when it finally did happen, you know, it came at a time when, as you stated, the city of Atlanta, through the city council, is about to vote to give funding to this training center to Cop City after it was exposed that instead of $30 million, it would be $67 million, double the cost, which they've lied about for 2 years, telling the public that it would be, and I say in air quotes, only $30 million. In addition to that, the last city council hearing, hundreds of people turned out to speak. Many were turned away. Over 100 people were turned away from speaking. It was the largest gathering at City Hall to make comment and protest any ordinance and/or bill that the city council has ever introduced. They knew that a repeat of that was going to happen this Monday, June 5th, when they're actually going to be voting on the resources, giving the resources to the Atlanta Police Foundation, a private foundation itself, which probably is the real entity that's a criminal nonprofit entity. That is what we think prompted the move by, again, the city and the state and the police and the district attorney of DeKalb County to move now to, again, further criminalize this movement in the face of massive protests against Cop City.
Kamau, we just have 30 seconds. This would be the largest police training facility in the country. Some would say, isn't it good for police to be trained? Why are you so opposed? And so many, from indigenous people protesting the use of the land to environmentalists overall, to people who are deeply concerned about police brutality.
Because we understand that this Cop City is not just for training. The officer that killed Rashad Brooks in Atlanta had over 2,000 hours of training. This is not about the training of police. This is about the militarization of police, the over-policing of Black communities, and the attacking of movements and organizations that oppose police violence. This is an extension of that, and that's why we are against Cop City, because we know this is not about training. This is about police militarization and the over-policing of Black communities.
Kamau Franklin, founder of the organization Community Movement Builders, speaking to us from Atlanta, Georgia. Coming up, the billionaire Sackler family gets legal immunity as a federal appeals court rules the OxyContin makers can be shielded from prosecution for their role in creating and fueling the deadly opioid epidemic. Back in 30 seconds.
The trees grow higher than the mountain in the land of free love and goodbye. The rivers ever grow and the fish is flowing. And the love lives in the sky.
In the Sky by Cat Stevens, also known as Yusuf Islam. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. This week, a federal appeals court ruled members of the Sackler family, the billionaire owners of OxyContin maker Purdue Pharma, can receive complete immunity from all current and future civil litigation related to their role in creating and fueling the opioid epidemic. The legal shield could lead to a settlement in the range of $6 billion for thousands of plaintiffs, including states, local governments, and tribes. Tuesday's ruling reverses a 2021 court decision that did not protect Sackler family members from liability as part of Purdue Pharma's bankruptcy declaration. The case can still be appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court. Opioid overdoses have killed over 500,000 people in the United States over the past 20 years, this according to the CDC, including prescription and illicit drugs. For more, we're joined by two guests. Ed Bish's 18-year-old son, Eddie, died of an OxyContin-related overdose in 2001. He was 18. Ed Bish founded RAP, that's Relatives Against Purdue Pharma. He wrote an essay for Stat News titled, "My Son Died of an Oxy Overdose. Drug company execs who are responsible should be sent to jail." Ed Bish has long called on the Department of Justice to prosecute the Sacklers. And in Mexico City, Christopher Glazek joins us, investigative reporter who was the first to publicly report how the Sackler family had significantly profited from selling the opioid OxyContin while fully aware that the highly addictive drug was directly fueling the opioid epidemic in America. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Ed Bish, let's begin with you. If you can talk about why you oppose this court decision this week, what it means for you and your family.
Well, what it means is it the best part of this deal is it doesn't has nothing to do with criminal prosecution. So for that, I am happy. Otherwise, that is, in my opinion, the only good part of this deal. There's many reasons. Most of the news stories are saying that 95% of the victims approved of the deal, while only 20% of the victims voted. So, you know, that's very misleading. I mean, I have a long list. Number one, the total deal's valued about $10 billion. The victims get $750 million, okay? That's 7.5%. Out of that, that's before the lawyer fees and expenses. So the victims are going to wind up with around 4%. Does that sound fair to you?
What does that come to per person, Ed?
Well, that's another thing. They have a point system. So, and you need valid records. So I talked to one lady who actually got addicted to OxyContin, went to prison for forging OxyContin prescriptions to feed her own addiction, went to prison. She filed, and the lawyer said, well, we need proof. She said, I went to jail for 2 years. What kind of proof do you? They want a lot of records, and some of them go back. A lot of people couldn't get the records. There's a lot of people who are going to be very disappointed. And please follow up with these people in a year or two.
Ed, just to be clear, you've been calling for the prosecution of the Sackler family. This court ruled they get total immunity. Your response to that?
Well, they get civil immunity. They don't get criminal immunity. Mara Healey, the Massachusetts governor, has stated she has seen the evidence, and the DOJ should do their job and prosecute. Punishable by fine means legal for a price. Just, you know, these companies, not just Purdue, they look at it as the cost of doing business. They made billions and billions. They pay a portion in a fine, and they walk away. In this case, the Sacklers get to walk away with civil immunity. They get to sleep like a baby at night. They're still billionaires. Without any criminal prosecutions, this is going to go on and on.
I want to bring Christopher Glazek into this conversation. You have been covering this for decades, just as Ed Bish has been living the horror of losing his son for over 20 years now. He lost him in 2001. Can you talk about this latest deal, how it differs from previous ones, and the overall scope of it, Chris?
Yeah, looking at the agreement, you'd have to say that the Sacklers did what they've always done. They struck a deal, they paid a bribe, and they're getting away with it. There's no admission of wrongdoing anywhere in the agreement. And the question is this really accountability? It's really important for people to understand the deal has this big fancy number in it, like the Sacklers are going to pay $6 billion. Well, they're going to pay that over 18 years. And when you have a giant fortune that's more than $10 billion, just the interest you earn every year is going to be enough to pay out that settlement. So it's important people understand the Sacklers are not losing their fortune. In fact, their fortune will probably be bigger in 5 years than it was 5 years ago. So, you know, there's a real question whether there's any accountability here in reality. You know, the question
wait a second.
Is how
wait,
did they get
wait.
This
I want to follow
deal?
Up. Yeah. I want to follow up on what you just said. You're saying that their profits will grow. What do you mean?
I'm saying when you have a fortune that's more than $11 billion, you know, just from your investments alone, from interest, even if you bought, you know, T-bills, you know, treasury bills from the federal government, you're earning so much money every year from your investments. And you know, so it's not like the Sacklers are going to send a wire over tomorrow for $6 billion. They have 18 years to pay a lot of the money. That means that the impact on them, on their day-to-day lives, on the number of dollars in their bank account is way, way, way smaller than it first appears.
In 2019...
And in literal dollar terms... Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Chris.
Oh, no, just, you know, in literal dollar terms, their fortune is not going to shrink and it probably will grow even larger. And so, you know, when we ask the question, have the Sacklers paid, you know, is this a big judgment for them? Is this going to change their lives? The answer is probably not. And then the question becomes, how did they get such a sweetheart deal? And, you know, there's a couple things to say about that. The first, you know, the original judge in this case was handpicked by the Sacklers. They did this crazy legal maneuver where they changed their headquarters at the last minute to White Plains, New York, because there was only one bankruptcy judge in that district. And then that judge ended up being very favorable for the Sacklers. He announced during the case it would be his last case ever. He was retiring. And then since retiring, he got a job with one of the law firms representing the Sacklers. That's number one. Number two, and this is really important for people to understand, the Sacklers had a giant fortune, most of which is held in offshore accounts. A lot of it's in the Isle of Jersey in the English Channel. And it is beyond the reach of U.S. government prosecutors. So the Sacklers said in the court case, they made the argument, hey, if you don't take this deal, it doesn't matter what judgment you get against us in the future. Maybe a court will award you $30 billion, you're not going to get a cent because all the money is offshore and you can't get at it. So the Sacklers had this really big leverage in the negotiation, which was that their money was protected. U.S. regulators could not get at their money. And for that reason, they said, hey, if you don't take this deal, you're going to get nothing. So you know, those two things are really important to point out.
Yeah. In 2000,
and then the other thing, which... Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, and then the third thing, you know, how did this deal come about? You know, they use this kind of novel legal procedure to insulate themselves from any future civil prosecution. And the reason that it is raising eyebrows is because they had this company that went bankrupt. Well, they extracted all the money out of the company, so it was really like a shell. And then as part of the bankruptcy agreement, they said, you know, you can't ever go after us as if the family had declared bankruptcy, because it's normal when you declare bankruptcy, you know, people can't go after you for civil judgments. But in this case, the family did not declare bankruptcy, and far from being bankrupt, they remain among the very richest people in the history of the world. And they're going to remain so for generations to come.
In 2019, the investigative news organization ProPublica published video of Dr. Richard Sackler of Purdue Pharma, the maker of OxyContin. A part of his deposition he gave in 2015 lawsuit in Kentucky, we're going to play a clip of. The company waged a three-year legal battle to keep the video secret. Sackler was questioned by attorney Tyler Thompson.
Sitting here today, after all you've come to learn as a witness, do you believe Purdue's conduct in marketing and promoting OxyContin in Kentucky caused any of the prescription drug addiction problems now plaguing the Commonwealth?
I don't believe so.
Sitting here today, after all you've come to learn as witness, do you believe that Purdue's conduct in Kentucky has led to an excessive or unnecessary amount of opioids being located throughout the Commonwealth of Kentucky?
I don't believe so.
Do you believe that any of Purdue's conduct has led to an increase in people being addicted in the Commonwealth of Kentucky?
No.
Dr. Richard Sackler was chairman and president of Purdue Pharma, the maker of OxyContin. Ed Bish, you lost your son in 2001 at the age of 18. Your response to what he says in this testimony that was long concealed?
I'm glad that it got out. It saw the light of day. A lot more documents are going to see the light of day. Am I surprised? Not even a little. How he sleeps at night, I don't know. The crimes are well documented. Chris has written some great articles. Dope Sick on Hulu, Crime of the Century on HBO. And on August 10th, Painkiller is going to show on Netflix. 2003, the very first book documenting their crimes, Painkiller, was published. 2001 was the very first congressional hearing on OxyContin deaths. 2001, I went to that hearing. And, you know, I read the headline, Purdue going out of business. Oh, finally. As soon as I start reading it and I saw the Sacklers are demanding immunity, I said, this is a bankruptcy scam. And that's one thing bankruptcy scam has exposed: the crazy bankruptcy laws, like judge shopping, like these third-party releases. And I hope it does go to the Supreme Court and they do the right thing. Will they? I have no idea. The only thing that can make up for this travesty is DOJ, do your job, follow the evidence. Mara Healey says she's seen the evidence. She was an attorney general, and they should prosecute. And so I pray every night that they do their job.
Christopher Glazek, we're going to do part two of this discussion and post it at democracynow.org. But I wanted to ask you about the many organizations that have dropped the Sackler name from buildings, like the Guggenheim, like the Louvre, most recently Oxford University. Can you talk about the significance of this? And also, you know, just the fact that you say their wealth is ever increasing in their offshore accounts.
Yeah, well, so there's one provision in the bankruptcy agreement which is quite interesting and important, and it says that any institution that has the Sackler name on it can take down the name, and the Sacklers cannot challenge that, even if they had some contract, some prior agreement. And there, you've seen over the last few years, in the wake of media coverage and activism, there's been this kind of domino effect of first museums and then universities taking down the Sackler name. And it was really interesting to see this process play out. You know, I wrote this piece. There were other articles. There was a lot of media attention around the Sacklers in late 2017. But at first, you know, I called all these museums and they said, we're not doing anything. We're not taking this down. This isn't our business. I called universities, you know, Yale. You know, they said, no, thank you. And then the activism started, and, you know, there had always been activism, but, you know, Nan Golden in particular in the art world conducted a series of really public actions that got a lot of media attention and really hit the Sacklers where it hurt. And she, you know, using her own influence in the art world and gathering all these people together, essentially forced a lot of museums to take down the name.
Chris Glazek, we're going to have to leave it there, but we're going to talk about that activism in part two. Thank you so much for being with us, investigative reporter, and Ed Bish, founder of Relatives Against Purdue Pharma. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining.
The Art of the Mixtape is not lost. Tune in to the Vancouver Mixtape for your own personal mix of Vancouver's best independent music, interviews, and more. Join me, Jesse, and my co-host Jamie on our trek through Vancouver's underground, Sunday nights at 8 o'clock on CJSF.
Radio Rewind.